Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
And welcome back to Overnight America. Oh, we got a lot to get to still, and only an hour left until Our American Stories starts at 2 o'clock, so we're live here in St. Louis, Missouri. Not a big fan of homeowners associations, but sometimes you can't help it. You just find the right home, and it just so happens to be in a neighborhood with HOA. When you watch HGTV, doesn't it drive you nuts? You see them look at a place, and they want to be downtown. Oh, what? And they have to find the right area. Oh, it's just wonderful. And then they'll say, oh, yeah, but this place has HOA fees. It's about $1,000 a month in some of these really rich areas. You're thinking, what? $1,000 a month? What are you getting? Are you getting your own personal trainer and chef and masseuse access to them or something? What is going on? And then you think to yourself, how in the world would it ever be worth it? It's just them robbing the people that are living there because they can't help but live at that one only place. Now, in Wentzville, there's a story from KMOV. It said a man's claiming the Homeowners Association is putting kids at risk by saying the fence he put around his pool is too high. When you put a pool down, it's like this with any parent. The worst nightmare that you could possibly have is that a kid gets in the backyard and falls in the pool. It's a nightmare scenario. Any responsible pool owner will do everything they possibly can to make sure that backyard is secure so that this tragedy never happens, let alone to their kid or the neighbors or anyone else. And that's exactly what this guy was doing. He was doing what I thought is what any rational, responsible human being would do. Except if you're in an HOA and they don't like that you put a fence that's tall, too tall. So let me play this. Here's from KMOV.
On the other side of this gate...
Now this is my swimming pool right here, sir.
Murray Randall of Wentzville explains his reasoning for this 6-foot vinyl fence.
I put it up because I thought it was the safest thing for a child.
Randall is worried someone will drown in his pool without this barrier.
I got this super strong.
It's just your regular white vinyl fence. I've seen them install this on this old house. So you put the post in and then you slide them over the post. And really, it depends on how far away the posts are, but in how far you get them down and how secure these are. But this, it's very expensive to put these things in. It's not cheap. This is not the cheap way to go. So you could technically put up chain link fence, sure. You can put up a privacy fence, and if you wanted to build it yourself as opposed to purchasing it pre-made, you can buy the different panels pre-made and you can put your own post in. I did that in Indiana. It is some of the hardest work I've ever had to do because the ground in where I lived in Indiana, it was like this clay ground, and it was just incredibly difficult to dig down into the ground low enough in order to put these posts in. So I know it's no joke. And if you want to put one of these things in by yourself, and this guy couldn't do it by himself. I'm sure if he had some buddies come over, he can help him. But he paid someone to put this in, apparently paid $10,000 to make sure it was high enough. He wanted to use this specific fence vinyl because he said the neighborhood kids couldn't climb it. And he says it's for safety purposes. I don't want a little kid coming over the fence and hurting themselves or worse, killing themselves because they drown in my pool. And listen to how the Homeowners Association handled that.
Here's the problem. The Homeowners Association in Piney Lakes Estates never approved Randall's 6-foot fence. The association only allows 4-foot fences with some exceptions.
The neighbors 5 houses down can have a 6-foot fence because of the apartments.
Something we saw for ourselves. Because Randall's fence wasn't approved, the neighborhood HOA filed a lawsuit. The case actually went to a jury, but because they were deadlocked, the case resulted in a mistrial. It's going to be—
How would you like to be a juror and you're looking at the case and someone presents to you, hey, we're representing the homeowners association. It says here that you're not allowed to properly secure the pool in your backyard. And then the person says, this is so kids don't drown. You're telling me you want me to rip up the fence and put other people's safety in jeopardy? And what other place have you ever lived in where it discouraged you to properly secure the pool in your backyard? Have you ever lived in a place like that?
To be retried later this month.
Hmm.
The president of the HOA lives directly across the street.
Hi, I'm trying to see if Neil is here.
Through a follow-up email, the HOA president offered no comment because of ongoing litigation until after the retrial, but added, I appreciate...
as part of this, is the main job of anyone in an HOA to hassle you at any possible time? It seems like all they do is hassle. You're telling me you couldn't see this as something of value in your neighborhood? And it's not like this is a shoddy fence by any means. It is a very well-done, expensive fence. This is a really nice area in Wentzville.
He's about most.
What is your concern with having a pool this close?
Drowning.
On the other side of Randall's fence, Joe Snyder.
Are you in favor of this fence?
Correct, I am.
And why is that?
I like the height of the fence, and I like the slickness of the fence where little ones can't get over the top of it.
Snyder hopes the HOA will reconsider its position. Randall also points to this. The neighborhood pool has a fence similar to his.
Yep.
The community pool has 6-foot fences.
They show the community pool in the neighborhood. So I guess he didn't want to use the community pool or whatever. He had his own pool. And that's your thing. It's your property. You should be able to do something like that. But there it is. Homeowners associations come in and try to hassle you for owning a nice home on a nice piece of property. You think the reason for these homeowners associations are to make sure you keep your property up, you make sure you keep the home values up, make sure you're not derelict in your responsibilities of your home. There's a lot of things you can do, all right? There's a lot of good things that they could try to make sure there's a certain standard in the neighborhood. But you're telling me that your standard is we need to have low fences that would put the health or at least the life of children at risk because your rules? Now, what adult, if you're a parent and you're someone that's in that homeowners association, if you're a parent and you say, nope, you know, I want you to rip that fence up, would you like to live next door to a pool that's open for your child to potentially walk over and fall into? And It's sad that this is even something that's debatable. It's sad. It makes me shake my head. Homeowner associations, don't hassle responsible homeowners for trying to responsibly ensure the safety of the children in the neighborhood through something that is, this is a $10,000 fence. It's not a big lot, so it's not like the $10,000 is spread out over a big piece of property and it's really shoddy done. No, this is an expensive fence that looks nice. And I love how KMOV pointed out the homeowners association themselves, the communal property that they maintain and own, has one of these exact fences already built into it. They point right at it and they say, yeah, it looks exactly like the fence you got up there. Isn't that crazy? They have a fence like that. But for some reason, this homeowner's the problem. Give me a break here. You know, coming up next, two different interviews I want to replay for you. These are pretty good ones. Internet addiction. Are we going to have to classify internet addiction in the United States? Because right now, we don't really classify it as a disorder or as a problem in general. But soon, I think we might. Lee Richardson's going to join us next. Overnight America, KMOX. And joining us now is a licensed professional counselor and founder of the Brain Performance Center in Dallas. Lee Richardson, thank you so much for coming on to KMOX.
Thank you for having me.
So you're talking today about how we've seen a rise in treatment programs, and we've also seen a rise in addiction for things like video games, YouTube, and whatnot. And I think that it's a pretty serious problem that a lot of teenagers are faced with. A lot of their pop culture comes from these social media networks, these YouTubes. They're consuming a lot of their content that way. And, you know, the thing is, they're designed to be highly addictive. They're designed for children to be on there as long as they can possibly be on there. I don't even know how a kid has a chance anymore to fight some of these big corporations that are psychologically trying to grab their minds.
Well, I agree with you, you know, and there's been some ex-Facebook executives that have said, yes, we fully understood the impact that we were having on the brain as we developed this, and we fully understand what we were doing. And the intent is to get them engaged. And, you know, it's so confusing for the brain, because anytime you start doing something and you start liking it, the brain starts producing this neurotransmitter, dopamine. And dopamine, oh, it feels so good. So it starts off like, yeah, you know, I like that, I like that. And those little nerve cells, they can get confused if you keep doing it over and over and over and the intensity increases. They get confused. It goes from, you know, I like that, to, you know, I want to do that, mm-hmm. to, wow, I need that, and I need it now. So it is certainly what's going on in the brain, and addiction is a brain disease.
Yeah, and the World Health Organization just recently had a classification called gaming disorder after research, but right now there really isn't anything that is recognized for internet addiction. Do you think that one day that'll be the case, or why do you think the World Health Organization hasn't recognized this yet?
Well, I think that they see it coming, and I think they've seen it coming. You know, I do think that it will be recognized as an addiction, because stop and think about it. Addiction used to be one or two things, alcohol or drugs. And now what the new addiction is, it's pleasurable activities, whether that's online gambling or shopping or sex or Facebook or video games. It's really what gives us pleasure. That's what we get addicted to, just like alcohol and drugs do, too. But we've learned and we've evolved. And we've learned those aren't such good things for us. So we've rechanneled our addictive energy.
Yeah, and before, I would say, just being as someone in media, so we've always also tried to grab people's attention. We want people to consume us. But I think from my own personal experiences, I've seen that at least people on television and radio are trying to add some sort of value, maybe some sort of entertainment that the person can consume, but they're not expecting the person to consume 24/7. And now you have things like these teenagers that are just going to pages like YouTube, and they're just watching it to watch. There's like really no value in the things they're watching. It's just something that has been filling a void of boredom or whatever it is. And they're just constantly always searching for something they're never finding. And I think that plays into it too.
I think you make a really good point. I think that they go, you know, to escape from reality. You come home, you've had a bad day at school, you feel like nobody likes you, you're the outcast. Mm. You know, so that's a nice escape from reality. Or you come home and you've had a bad day at school or work and you're all hyped up and you pick up that video game and it calms you down.
Mm-hmm.
There's a whole psychology behind gaming and social media.
Yeah. All right. Joining us now is a licensed professional counselor, founder of the Brain Performance Center in Dallas, Lee Richardson. So what does the Brain Performance Center actually do?
Well, we focus on brain health, and first thing we do is see how's that brain working. Everything you do, you don't. As I said before, addiction is a brain disease. Depends on how the brain's working. So we'll use different techniques. We'll use neurofeedback, neuromodulation, cognitive behavioral therapy to create regulation in the brain. First thing we do is we figure out what is dysregulated, and then we put a treatment plan in place to fix it. And that is a treatment plan that does not include medication.
Mm-hmm. You know, not including medication is probably important, too, because you just don't want to get them hooked on something else, you know?
Well, and I'm not licensed to manage meds, but I find that, you know, anymore, it's not working for more and more people.
Yeah. Well, part of it is changing the habits. Like, for me, being in radio, I am really drawn to different creators. So I watch YouTube, and I like to see what other creators are doing. But I don't see myself just endlessly scrolling it just to try to, you know, fill every single moment I have that's downtime. And I know that some kids will go to school, that's all they think about, and they'll get home, and that's all they'll try to do is they'll just go on, and they're always looking, and they're always on social media, and they're always feeling like they're missing out. And part of what you guys talk about is that some people don't really believe this is much of a problem. They maybe they're at a point of their life where they say, you know, real problems are drug addictions. This is just like, you know, I don't know why you're even trying to classify internet addiction as something that's dangerous because, you know, at least they're not taking the drugs. How do you convince people like that that this is a serious problem that we're facing?
Well, there's good research that shows that people that demonstrate addictive behavior towards the internet, they rank much higher for anxiety and for depression. Mm-hmm. And anxiety and depression, that's a mental health problem. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of times I think people that are depressed, they socially isolate, and they can create some form of social community in these different gaming communities. You may never meet the people. Wouldn't know them if you sat next to them or ran into them at the grocery store, but you can game with them, and that gives you a false sense of community. Hmm. And I think that's, you know, when you stop, and you made a good point, when people are thinking about, when am I going to be able to have access to that? And they're planning how they're going to get access to it, whether it's social media or a game, then that's a problem.
Yeah.
And if they're lying about how much time they spend doing it, that's a problem.
Hmm.
And if they're sleep deprived, you know, if you're sleep deprived, you can't go into school or work and function at the same level. And if it's impacting the relationships you have with your family, your friends, your spouse, your partners, that's a problem.
Yeah, and I've done different fundraisers for people that help with like food issues with kids that go to school, and they talk about how difficult it is for a kid to pay attention to the teacher if they're always constantly being, you know, they're worried about having a meal or they're hungry or whatever it is, and how that really stunts their educational experience and their learning abilities. And I think something like this is the same thing. If you go to school and all you're constantly thinking about is, oh man, I can't wait to go home so I can, you know, play this or do that, then it kind of has the same effect, doesn't it? It has the effect that it's taking away from something that's a really important experience in their life, which is their education.
Well, you're exactly right. And I can see how the video games can put that brain into a state of hyper arousal. I mean, you see this zombie coming at you with this big rusted pipe, and that throws you into that fight or flight mode. You know, ooh, what do I do? And the threat doesn't have to be real. It's a perceived threat that puts that autonomic nervous system into that fight or flight mode. And when you do that, you're redirecting blood away from the frontal lobes in the brain where you think, you pay attention, you stay on task, you finish what you start. You're redirecting that blood flow to the organs that you need for survival.
Mm-hmm.
So you can't perform.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting. Even as adults, I think we talk about how we Netflix binge, where we can't wait to go home and watch 12 straight hours of a television program or something, which, you know, I think is, it might be similar in some cases. But I always wonder, how do you know where the line is, where there might be some sort of issue? If maybe you have a kid that, you know, as soon as they come home, the first thing they do is they drop the book bag off and, you know, take the jacket off and they run to their room and you don't see them for 8 hours. Like, where's the line where you start to see there may be some issues with this?
Well, I think if you see they're not socially engaging with their family or their friends and they're socially isolating, that's a pretty big red flag.
Mm-hmm.
And if you take that away from them and you see them go into a withdrawal-like state, that's a huge red flag.
Yeah.
And that, you know, as a parent or as a friend or a sibling, use your observation skills. What happens when you try to take that away from them? And if they go into a withdrawal state, you know, I've had people come in my office, Miss Lee, do you have a phone charger? And I do.
Mm-hmm.
But I'll say, no. And you just see this panic look on their face.
Oh, yeah.
Oh my gosh. Well, my phone's going to die. I'm like, it's going to be okay. You know, why don't you turn it off? You're not going to use it while you're in here anyway.
Mm-hmm. All right. You know, I remember when I was growing up and someone, it was like not necessarily a joke, but someone would say, you know, one day you won't, you can't wait to get home because there's nothing greater than kicking your shoes off and being able to relax. But I remember when I was younger, I never wanted to be in the house. I wanted to go out and play with the other kids, or, you know, I wanted to, we always played street hockey or basketball or something like that. And this is really before the rise of the internet, but things have really changed. Now kids don't want to go out and do those things because it's more appealing for them to sit inside, which the internet really has brought that into the home where it kind of makes them, all the entertainment is brought to them as opposed to them going out and socializing with other people. And, you know, that's kind of, that's just really par for the course of one of the dangers we have to watch out for raising kids in today's world.
And it starts off a lot earlier now. I mean, I have two boys, and I taught them their ABCs and their numbers, and I used these things called flashcards.
Mm-hmm.
And now parents give them an iPad, and there's some really creative and very engaging ways that you can learn your numbers and your letters. But it takes, there you're creating that bond, that digital bond. And, you know, I used to take my kids outside and say, this is a tree, this is a rock. And we just don't do that anymore. When you think about what you learned as a kid, I learned how to negotiate out on the playground. I learned who I could trust to push me in that spring. Not him. He doesn't like me. He's going to push me so high, he's going to try and dump me.
All right, so right now the World Health Organization, they don't really recognize internet addiction as a disorder. If people want to learn more about what you're doing, because you are doing some good work at the Brain Performance Center, or if they want to learn more about this topic in general, where should they go?
Well, if they want to learn more about the Brain Performance Center, we have a Facebook page, we have a YouTube channel, and we have a website, thebrainperformancecenter.com. Mm-hmm. And there is a lot of work being done. They can Google addiction recovery, and there's a lot of good information out on the internet. I encourage people to look at sites like Harvard Health, the Mayo Clinic, the Cleveland Clinic, Stanford University, because as much good as there is out there, there's also some very confusing information.
Oh, yeah. No, I agree. It's tough. You see a lot of these trends online that get a lot of traction, and you'll read it and think, I wonder if they actually know what they're talking about. So it's good to go to a source that has researched this sort of thing. Lee Richardson, who is a licensed professional counselor, founder of the Brain Performance Center in Dallas, thank you so much for joining us here on KMOX.
Thank you for having me.
And she joins us on the Quiver River Electric guest line on KMOX. Joining us now from creditcards.com, their industry analyst, Ted Rossman. Thank you so much for coming on to KMOX.
My pleasure.
So you guys did a survey, and I was wondering why you decided to do a survey regarding hidden accounts and different bank accounts that their spouses hide from them.
This is a really big deal because a lot of households are living very close to the edge financially. We look to the recent government shutdown as one example of this, where it was really catastrophic for many households when they missed a paycheck or two. And that was one of the reasons why we wanted to take a deeper look at people who are either hiding money or doing some secret spending. Both can be harmful.
Hiding money or secret spending. Let's look at both, because part of the study said, 29 million Americans are currently hiding a checking, savings, or credit card account from their spouse or partner. 29 million, that's a big number. Was that even surprising to you?
I was surprised at how big that number was. It works out to be about one out of every five people who are married or otherwise living with a partner. And millennials are doing this more than any other age group. 28% of people between the ages of 18 and 37 are hiding money from a live-in partner. And that compares to only 15% of people who are age 38 or older. I think there's a few possible reasons for this. One that I point to specifically for millennials is that a lot of millennials grew up with divorced parents, more so than their older counterparts. And I think that that may be filtering into their own relationships, where a lot of young adults are keeping a freedom fund of sorts and stashing money away just in case the relationship doesn't work out. I think that's harmful, though, because it's assuming the worst, and it's also putting you in a difficult position in the here and now. It's hard enough to meet your financial goals when you're both on the same page. It's really hard when somebody's squirreling money away.
When you say freedom fund, what would like a freedom fund be?
I think that many people are setting money aside and hiding it from their spouse because they want a little pocket of money that the other person doesn't have access to in case they break up, in case they need to start over. I think that's one of the reasons people are hiding accounts. I think another big one is because people are ashamed of something in their financial past. Oh. It could be that they think that their spouse might disapprove of the way they're spending their money, or maybe it's some debt they've incurred in the past, anything from credit card debt to student debt or other choices. The thing is, though, even though it's hard to talk about money, you have to do it. It's so much worse to hide it because then it just calls the whole relationship into question because the other person will probably find out at some point. And if they find out after years of hiding it, they're really going to wonder, well, what else are you hiding? Or, gosh, I thought I knew this person. And it really creates a lot of uncomfortable questions. I know it's hard, but it's better to get it out in the open now.
You know, back in the day, you just bought tools, or if you're a woman, you'd buy shoes. And, you know, next thing you know, you had a large collection, and that's where all your money went to. And now you're hiding it. What I don't understand either is the millennial side of it. I look at the millennial generation. I'm on the very high end of the millennial, but I guess I'm technically one. We always get chastised for not planning for the future. We're not saving for retirement. We have no emergency funds. We're living, you know, basically paycheck to paycheck. Where are they finding all this extra money to stash aside just for, you know, in case something happens with the relationship?
Well, a lot of times it is coming at the detriment of other financial goals. That there are plenty of people who are hiding accounts, and yet they're also carrying credit card debt. And the average credit card is charging about 17.5%, which is a record high.
Ugh.
So that's part of the reason this is so bad, is that, you know, for every $1,000 you're setting aside, you might be paying $175 a year in interest. So, you know, that's harmful. Or, you know, maybe these people who are squirreling money away are putting less into their 401k or putting less towards their student loans. These are all reasons why it's important to be on the same page with your finances.
Mm-hmm. Ted Rossman from creditcards.com joining us here on KMOX. And one of the things you tracked as well is how much hurt this could bring to a relationship. And you also came up with a statistic that said, was it 55% believe this is almost as equal to as cheating when it comes to hiding money from your partner?
That was really surprising. And to break that down a little further, 20% said that financial infidelity is worse than physical cheating, and 35% said they're about the same. So that's where we got that 55% number. Mm-hmm. It just goes to show how important this is to people. And, you know, I want to stress to people that you can have independence financially within a relationship. This whole concept of yours, mine, and ours can still be alive and well. The thing is that you have to be clear about it on the front end. You can't just go off on your own and stash money away. But I think it's totally fine if people want to have their own accounts, and, you know, then you can spend no questions asked. You know, you feel like you can go out with your friends, you can buy whatever it is you like to buy, but do it within the construct of a healthy, open financial dialogue. So, like, if you and your spouse want to say that we're each going to set aside a few hundred dollars every paycheck, or we're each going to set aside a certain percent of every paycheck that we can spend on our own, no questions asked, I think that's great as long as it fits into your overall budget, but don't hide money. That leads to a lot of big problems.
Yeah, I'd be pretty upset if I found out my wife had a secret credit card and she was just racking up debt, because we tried to be very responsible with our finances. But part of this study, too, you talked about what it would take to lead to breaking up with that partner. And was it 2% of those would end a relationship if they found out they had $5,000 in debt?
That's right. So we asked about, what if your spouse had $5,000 of secret credit card debt? I think that's a pretty serious offense, especially at the high interest rates we're talking about, 17.5% on average. But that's right. Only 2% said they'd leave the relationship over that. 16% wouldn't care much or at all. And 81% would be upset, but they wouldn't end the relationship. And I think this underscores what I was saying earlier about trust, that even though it's hard, it's good to get these things out there. Hiding it only creates bigger problems down the road. Most people are going to be forgiving, and I think millennials in particular understand debt all too well. So many have dealt with student loans, and a lot of times financial infidelity starts small. Mm-hmm. It's just a little bit of extra spending or a little bit of saving on the side or, you know, one account that, oh, it can't be that bad, right? And then it snowballs from there, and that's when you get in over your head. So the more we can talk about these things, I think you'll actually find a lot more commonality with your partner than you might fear.
Yeah, it's better to talk about it with your partner before the repo man comes and takes your car away because you're missing the payments, you know?
Yeah, these are the worst kind of scenarios.
No.
Or let's say you're trying to apply for a mortgage together, and then you get your credit checked, and oh my gosh, you know, there's this account, and there's this debt, and I didn't know about it, and it's in the throes of the house hunting process, and these are the kinds of things you want to avoid.
Yeah. So if you want to become more financially literate, or like, let's say maybe you guys, everything's good, everything's on track, and they're listening to this interview right now, and they're worried, like, well, we might not be hiding money, but we probably could be a little smarter with the way we handle our finances. Can they go to creditcards.com, maybe learn a couple of tricks, things like that?
Definitely, yeah. We have great tips about budgeting, getting out of debt, and if you can pay your credit card bills in full, then you're a great candidate for credit card rewards because you're going to avoid the interest, and then you can rack up all kinds of cash back and travel rewards. That can be a really fun way to talk about money with your spouse. Plan a great trip, maximize your spending, and maybe you can even get there for free sometime this spring or summer thanks to a credit card sign-up bonus.
Yeah, and we do that with our credit card. I basically charge everything on the credit card and pay it off immediately. You know, it's just basically at the end of the month, you go and you pay whatever it is. But the thing is, sometimes you get some really awesome bonuses with the way that you rack up points, and some people do mileage for your flights and things like that. Those are huge advantages. And that's one of the things I always disagreed with. Dave Ramsey's the big radio guy, goes out and does financial piece. He says, cut up your credit cards because you're just going to put yourself in further debt. I think, no, I'm actually getting some benefit out of paying on the credit cards. I'm paid off at the end of the month, and I get bonuses stuff on it.
40% of credit card holders pay their bills in full every month. And if you can do that, credit card rewards can open up tremendous opportunities for you. If you want to keep it simple, I would look for something like a 2% cash back card. Mm-hmm. Citi Double Cash is a good example. Mm-hmm. 2% cash back on everything you buy. If you want to treat it like a hobby, and many people do, then you can get into some of the more adventurous travel cards, maybe even some of the rotating categories where you think about if you spend a lot on dining, maybe you get a card that gives 4 or 5 points per dollar on dining, or if you like to travel a lot, cards like the Chase Sapphire Reserve, they'll give you 50,000 bonus points for signing up. That's worth about $750 in free travel. You can get airport lounge access. You can get free global entry and TSA pre-check. There's a lot of great perks out there. And if you can pay your bills in full, have at it because the world is yours.
I know. That's where it's at. Ted Rossman, you're an industry analyst with creditcards.com. Thank you so much for coming on KMOX.
Thanks for having me.
And he joins us on the Quiver River Electric guest line. It's kind of sad if you're hiding finances from your loved one. That could really get out of control. I can see how that would start a lot of fights. Oh, man, it'd be devastating if I found out my wife was spending a bunch of money and like, oh, great, how are we going to be able to afford this? Oh, no. One other thing for you to worry about. It's Overnight America, KMOX. Oh, boy. So the Dave Barry best of profile piece aired during that last break. I got to play something for you because this is just too much. Proofreading Woman. In the song that they use in that, let me play this. It's
here we go.
And this is what he plays. This is during the profile that Charlie Brennan had with Dave Barry. And they play this little piece of the song in it.
A woman with a beautiful body. Something like a woman with a pretty...
All right, you've heard it a million times. We air it probably once a night. I mean, we got these It's a way to highlight the profiles that we air, and we do a lot of great interviews here on KMOX. And if you haven't listened to Profiles on the Weekend, it's really fascinating discussions with people in the community or profile people that are here or traveling through, in this case, Dave Barry, who was coming through to St. Louis. Now, I enjoy listening to him myself. It's difficult to listen to that particular profile clip because we air the song every night. And you get used to hearing it. So producer Mike earlier said, you know what? I got a parody of that song. I said, oh, you got a parody of this song. I wanted to hear it. And I'm just going to replay this. It's so funny. What's the name of your band again?
Mike Anderson and the Rock Bottom Producers.
All right, here we go.
Here we go.
Something like a host with a beautiful mindset. Something like a host with a pretty voice. I like a host with a big vocabulary, and it's a good thing you can't see his face. I stay up for my host Ryan Recker. I stay up for Overnight America. But the biggest secret is the show would be a snoozer if it wasn't for the world's best producer.
Wow, how good is that? Seriously, that is what he said, the Rock Bottom Producers, and producer Mike, proofreading radio host is the parody there. I thought that was hilarious. So maybe what I'll do is I'll find that little clip-it that we've been airing, and I'll just replace Dave Barry's portion of it with producer Mike's and see if anyone notices. Oh, that is so funny. I posted a clip of that online on Twitter, at Ryan Recker, if you want to go share that with other people. I just think it's absolutely hilarious. You know, we played the interview with our guest just a little bit ago, Internet Addiction, Is It a Real Thing? In Pennsylvania, and I found this on a blog called the PlayStationLifestyle.net, Pennsylvania lawmakers introducing a bill that would add a 10% tax on video games rated M for mature and adults only, specifically sold at retail. So the money collected would go into an account with the goal of improving safety measures at Pennsylvania schools. Taxing? Look who just came back. Taxing video games? Taxing video games. Did you hear that, producer Mike? Wow. I guess he was working out here, and he just happened to hear me play his proofreading producer song just a second ago. Oh, my, it's so funny. The syntax, you see that all the time. It's cigarettes, alcohol, things like that. It's a good way to fundraise based on things that are particularly mature in nature. You know, cigarettes are mature in nature, alcohol and that mature in nature. So it's House Bill number 109, introduced by Representative Christopher B. Quinn, Republican, first proposed a similar bill back last year in October. Said it didn't make it out of committee, but he's trying it again. He said the concern is that violent media, including video games, may be to blame for violent outbursts. Normally, when they study this sort of thing, they come to different conclusions, but he is linking the two. Normally, this is also what happens when you have legislators that don't know the industry or the culture of video games all that well, and they come to their own conclusion and try to find ways to legislate against that without actually having an understanding of it. And I think that's normally what happens with all of these different video game bills that come up. They've been talking about this forever. I mean, go back to the 90s. You go back to the early, 93, 94, and Mortal Kombat came out. It's pale in comparison to what it is today. But video games, like a lot of other things, protected under free speech. It's just like a book that may have some controversial material in there. You can't tell the person they can't publish a book because of controversial statements in there. It's kind of like going back to libraries that would have Mark Twain off the shelves because they didn't like the content that was inside of it. Huckleberry Finn, we should say. And that happens. I mean, we've gone through different phrases of this before, and I guess it's the video games now that they look at this. And this is what the blog points out. I think it's pretty important. He used evidence from the National Center for Health Research, an article written by them that talked about the increased aggression linked to violent video games, but failed to mention the part of the article that drew a clear distinction between aggression and violence with no evidence linking the two. So playing video games does not link to violence, but he uses this as a way to try to implicate that it is, or try to say that it is. And it's really not. And this is kind of a fascinating thing, too. If you realize they're saying that if it's a mature game, how do they know it's a mature game? Well, there's a rating system. It's the ESRB. It was something that was created back in the day to try to point out what may be violent video games so they're not selling them to children or whatever. But the ESRB is a non-government board that rates video games. So essentially, a non-government agency would determine what video games are taxed at 10% in the state of Pennsylvania if they decide to put this through. It's kind of interesting. They're responsible for who gets taxed and who doesn't. A non-government agency is going to be the one dictating who gets taxed. That's just a little interesting, right? I thought that played well with our internet addiction. I think it's much more likely or more damaging is going to be the people and the kids that won't leave their bedroom because they get sucked into a world in a community or whatever it is. And they just won't leave because they see the greater value in the video game than real life. And to me, that's pretty damaging to a kid's mind if they don't know their limitations on things like video games. And it's so easy to get sucked into that sort of thing. It's so easy to be immersed by it all. You know, it feels good. Really, it's hard to combat that. You got to be careful as a parent when they're spending too much time on that. All right, well, that will do it for us tonight. And man, I got to tell you, we had a fun night. We only have one left in the week. I always look forward to the last show of the week, mostly because, yeah, it's the weekend. We got to enjoy it. But this weekend will be a fun one. We got some fun interviews tomorrow. In fact, earlier in the week, we hooked up with Canada with our friend Drex up there. He does the late shift with Drex. Tomorrow, we're going to hook up with the BBC. I'm going to have a couple of BBC presenters join us on the show tomorrow. I'm curious what they think about American radio. And apparently, there's a lot of Americans that are going over there to work for them. And they make fun of us, and you know, in a playful way. So that'll be fun. Tomorrow night, Overnight America. Have a great night.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.